So before Dr. Krishna Chandra begins our second surgery for today, we'll have a look at the disease that he's going to remove. This is 16A, the Varuna Lila, the pastime of Krishna releasing Nanda Maharaj from the clutches of Varuna, symbolizes the misuse of intoxicants. Some people mistakenly think that imbibing liquor and other intoxicants will increase one's spiritual bliss and improve one's bhajan. Such misunderstanding must be abandoned. The transcendental happiness of the living entities and Braj is known as Nanda. In order to enhance that happiness, some deluded people drink wine, and as a result they create the greater nata of forgetting themselves. Kidnapping Nanda and taking him to the abode of Varuna presents this obstacle for the Vaishnavas. People who are absorbed in the mood of Braj never drink wine. It's quite ironic because they opened up a liquor shop at Radhakund. There's also a Govardhan and in Vrindavan, of course. So maybe these people are not in the mood of Braj, even though they're here. So why don't those absorbed in the mood of Braj take intoxicants? It's interesting what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling us here, that the results of using intoxicants will only be that they create the great anatta of forgetting themselves. It's very interesting, because what we're talking about is that it's a kind of merging, but it's an emerging based on ignorance, not on philosophical basis, like the impersonalists. They also want to merge, but in the mode of ignorance, people take sugar intoxications to forget their self-identity for different reasons. They do this sometimes out of frustration, sometimes out of loneliness, so many things. But it's the sort of forgetfulness of the self that they try to induce, so they don't have to deal with life. So it's not such a good thing to do. I wanted to read a story from Shudakiti is what is the difficulty, which really makes this very clear. This happened in 1975 in Hyderabad. It was April 11th. I can only remember a few times when it was difficult being in the same room with Srila Prabhupada. Obviously, one could easily imagine yearning to be in His Divine Grace's presence 24 hours a day. However, the presence of others sometimes changed the atmosphere in Srila Prabhupada's room. One day, Devananda Maharaj came to visit Srila Prabhupada. He had been initiated by Srila Prabhupada and was now a sannyasi. He had also been his personal servant for some time in 1970. He asked to see Srila Prabhupada and was allowed darshan, even though he was no longer a member of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada was seated behind his desk, and upon entering Srila Prabhupada's room, Devananda did not offer his obeisances. Brahmananda Maharaj and I were also in the room. Devananda wore bright orange satin robes, and his long hair and beard were matted. He had a very strange smile on his face. He began to speak to Srila Prabhupada in such a bizarre way that I couldn't understand anything he was saying. He moved his hands about as if he were doing some type of mudra. It was too bizarre to watch. He appeared to have taken too much intoxication. Srila Prabhupada tolerated his nonsense for a few moments. There was no conversational exchange as Devananda was incoherent. Finally, his all-merciful spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, said, "If you want to come back, you do like him." He pointed to Brahmananda Maharaj and continued, "You shave your head and face, put on a dhoti, and then it's all right, you can come back." Devananda continued flailing his arms. "No, no, this is not why I'm here," he said. He continued to move his body about while speaking nonsense. Srila Prabhupada had had enough. "Get out," Srila Prabhupada shouted. Devananda started to shake with anger. Brahmananda Maharaj grabbed him and forcefully escorted him out of the room. Srila Prabhupada was furious. "Even though his anger was not directed towards me, I felt like I'd been struck by lightning. Just being in the vicinity of Srila Prabhupada's anger was frightening. If I could have disappeared, it was the time to do so." It is difficult to describe the spiritual potency generated by Prabhupada's rage. His total commitment to his disciples was obvious by this encounter. This was one of the most difficult experiences I faced while being with Srila Prabhupada. It was amazing how I tolerated Devananda's bizarre behavior. He offered to accept him back as his disciple, even though Devananda had strayed far from Krishna consciousness and had obviously crossed the threshold of sanity into madness. When his divine grace saw that he had no interest in accepting the instruction, he mercifully sent him away before he could commit any further offenses. Uh-huh. And this person, he died of self-induced starvation in South India. He starved himself to death. So, you know, this intoxication is completely in the mode of ignorance. And it can lead to very difficult circumstances, you know, as we see, because his offense of Prabhupada was quite nasty. I wanted to have a look at this because it's not a topic that really interests me, so I'm always looking for ways to make it like palatable and even relishable. So I thought we'd have a look at the way Prabhupada dealt with intoxication in the early days. Very, very wonderful. This is the handout, Stay High Forever, Srila Prabhupada's Revolutionary Alternative to the Misuse of Intoxicants. It's all from Prabhupada Lilamrita, Planting the Seed, Chapter 9. And I'll start with a news release. This was printed in a newspaper. While this was going on, he's talking about the drug scene. While this was going on, an old man, 1 year past his allotted 70, wandered into New York's East Village and set about to prove to the world that he knew where God could be found. In only 3 months, the man, Swami A.C. Bhaktivedanta, succeeded in convincing the world's toughest audience, bohemians, acid heads, potheads, and hippies, that he knew the way to God. Turn off, sing out, and fall in. This new brand of holy man, with all due deference to Dr. Leary, has come forth the brand of consciousness expansion that is sweeter than acid, cheaper than pot, and non-bustable by fuzz. How is all this possible? Through Krishna, the Swami says. That's from the East Village Abha, October 66. So he had quite an impact on these people. Now let's read on a little bit. Prabhupada lived amid the drug culture in a neighborhood where the young people were almost desperately attempting to alter their consciousness, whether by drugs or by some other means, whatever was available. Prabhupada assured them they could easily achieve the highest consciousness they desired by chanting Hare Krishna. It was inevitable that in explaining Krishna consciousness, he would make allusions to the drug experience, if only to show that the two were contrary paths. The local head shops carried a full line of paraphernalia, marijuana, LSD, peyote, cocaine, and hard drugs like heroin or barbiturates were easily purchased on the streets and in the parks. Underground newspapers reported important news on the drug scene, featured a cartoon character named Captain High, and ran crossword puzzles that only a seasoned head could answer. Prabhupada had to teach that Krishna consciousness was beyond the revered LSD trip. Do you think taking LSD can produce ecstasy and higher consciousness? He once asked his storefront audience. Then just imagine a room full of LSD. Krishna consciousness is like that. People would regularly come in and ask Swamiji's disciples, do you get high from this? And the devotees would answer, oh yes, you can get high just by chanting. Why don't you try it? It's just the way Prabhupada was preaching to them. And then on the next page, I just want to read a little bit where Hari Griva, Prabhupada asked him to preach. It's just above the little squiggle, the paragraph above the little squiggle. Here, Prabhupada's asked Hari Griva, this time he's just a new one, he's only a week off the drugs himself. But Prabhupada's convinced him to give it up. And he says, well, no matter how high you go on LSD, you eventually reach a peak, and then you have to come back down. Just like traveling into outer space in a rocket ship, he gave one of Swamiji's familiar examples. Your spacecraft can travel very far away from the Earth for thousands of miles, day after day, but it cannot simply go on traveling and traveling. Eventually it must land. On LSD, we experience going up, But you always have to come down again. That's not spiritual consciousness. When you actually attain spiritual or Krishna consciousness, you stay high. Because you go to Krishna, you don't have to come down. You can stay high forever. Pretty amazing preaching. So you can, this is what we were saying earlier about the, we have to develop this ability to realize where our audience is at and preach appropriately. You see how brilliant Prabhupada is preaching here? If he'd been straight, how could he have dealt with his people? How could he have transformed their lives in the way he did? It's pretty amazing.
Even in Bhagavad Gita, when he gives examples of a drunk, he says that every time you drink, you just think that is Krishna is the taste
of water. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Any questions about this?
Actually, I think Papa saved us by giving those four regulated principles right in the beginning, so we don't really see much of this.
Yeah. Those of us that are following it don't, but there is quite a large drug and even drinking problem in the community, especially among the young. And it's something that we have to deal with. But you're right, the four regs have really... Prabhupada calls them the principles of freedom.
Yeah.
And they actually are. They give us so much protection if we're strict about following them. Make life a lot easier. Yeah.
I have one.
Sure, yes. Go ahead.
Like more technical question. Allopathic medicine is always alcohol in...
Homeopathic,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, that's not a problem, because if you look at Ayurveda, so many Vedic forms, you know, that's the primary Vedic form of medicine, but, you know, there's so much use of things that we would consider toxic, that we would consider unclean, so many of these medicines. So, you know, if it's medicinal purposes, that's a different thing than, you know, like taking it as a form of intoxicant. It's not like we're going to drink a bottle of homeopathic medicine.
It's a different consideration, right?
Yeah. But you have to also, see whether it suits you. Some people, they just can't even take that amount of alcohol in the system. But with medicines, it's a different thing. Main thing that we get from Hari Bhakti Vilas is that all medicines should be offered.
Offered?
Even with homeopathic medicines?
Yeah,
homeopathic medicines. Offered?
Yeah, we can offer them. Dhammantari, we offer them to Dhammantari.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Because we shouldn't even take water that's unoffered, because anything that goes into the system will have effect. So, it's best if we, any medicines that we have to take, then they're offered also.
How are they offered to Dhammantari?
I actually offer to my deities like that. Everything that I have to take, I just say, well, you know, I'm your servant and I only live on your remnants, so, you know, please be kind enough to accept it. With Dhammantari, I think it's just a matter of putting it before him and asking him to take. I don't know the details of that because I don't do it. But that's what the tradition is, usually to offer a medicine to Dhammantari.
I used to offer to our deities some years ago, but then I stopped. I thought, this is like nothing pleasurable for Krishna. This is nothing, it doesn't have good taste. it's how is it pleasurable for him? It's supposed to be bhoga. It's supposed to be something that is like...
Yeah.
So then I stopped. So,
oh, okay.
But how...
That's a nice point. But the other point of the thing is that... we have a relationship with Thakurji, and we're dependent on him. You know, like if we, I don't know about you, but, you know, my preference is not to eat anything that he hasn't eaten. And I'm his servant. I'm maintaining this thing so that I can serve him. So it's sort of like in the mood of a servant taking shot of a master and a friend and just like, help me out, basically. You know, it's not that we would offer it alone. I usually offer it with something that's edible.
Like like doctor tells, know that you don't take an empty stomach, so Krishna has to eat something and then take medicine. So that I don't think you have an empty stomach.
Well, let's begin our second surgery for today. We'll begin by looking at Prabhupada's Krishna book. Anybody have anything they'd like to share in that?
I just have one question. Like, you know, Prabhupada mm-hmm. mentions about Nanda being arrested because he took bath at an inauspicious time.
Ah.
What does that really mean? Because, you know, when we go and take a, you know, dip in anywhere, uh-huh. nobody really considers, like, auspicious, inauspicious time. What does it mean?
Too early in the morning.
Or when it's dark.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it means.
Yeah. But actually, the reason he did that was that the parent time was very, very short, and he wanted to do it appropriately. And he hadn't actually given that, he didn't make a mistake. But as Verna tells him, this foolish servant, I mean, he didn't know what he was doing. So he just saw somebody taking a bath, you know, just bring him. But the fault wasn't with Nanda Maharaj, it was with the servant who arrested him. But there are, you know, like there are restrictions on when you take birth. Like that. Even in terms of taking bath in your own home.
Like not when it's dark.
Yeah, not when it's like before, not before Brahma Muhurta.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's best. It's not so good.
Wow.
Why?
It's considered inauspicious. The negative energies are prevalent at that time.
So what would be Brahma Muhurta like now? Like, you know,
1.5 hours before sunrise.
So around 4:30.
Well, if you've got another vidhi in place, which is Mangalati,
yeah.
You want to go to Mangalati, yeah. Then you would take accordingly.
Okay.
But you're not going to take bath at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
or something.
That's good.
No, if you've got that program, then no problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing I was thinking about this uh-huh. Leela was that, you know, when Varuna gives so much respect to Krishna and Nanda is so bewildered, then he's thinking it's because Krishna is such a sweet child, you know, that, you know, that's why Varuna is respecting him. Not because he's the Supreme Personality. I just love it the way...
So, yeah, that was actually something I picked up also.
Like,
so Aishwarya
is totally covered by Madhurya here. So beautiful.
Yeah. He's because he's such a special boy. Doesn't mean because he's God. He's such a sweet man. The other thing I picked up on was Bruna's mood of... you know, he took it as his own offense that his servant had done this. And he says, I'm very sorry that my foolish man, by not knowing what to do or what not to do, has mistakenly arrested your father Nanda Maharaj. So I beg your pardon for the offense of my servant. I think that it was your plan to show your mercy to me by your personal presence here. My dear Lord Krishna Govinda, be merciful to me. Here's your father. You can take him back immediately. So just a sweet mood of, you know, like realizing that mistake is on my hand.
And look at the contrast with Indra, you know.
yeah. But we have to be fair, you know, and remember that Krishna instigated that, you know. We have to not be too harsh on Indra because, you know, that rascal boy did that. Didn't really have a lot to do with Indra. I wanted to read a little bit from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He gives some sweet insights. Having worshipped Lord Janardhan and fasted on Ekadasi day, Nanda Maharaj entered the water of the Kalimyala Dwarasi to take his bath. Because Nanda Maharaj entered the water in the dark of night, disregarding that the time was inauspicious, a demoniac servant of Varuna seized him and brought him to his master. The servant of Varuna who arrested Nanda Maharaj is stated to be a demon for several reasons. First, the servant was foolishly ignorant of Nanda Maharaj's position as a pastime father of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Also, Nanda Maharaj's intention was to carry out the injunctions of scripture regarding breaking his Ekadasi fast. Therefore, Varuna's servant should not have arrested Nanda on technical grounds that he bathed in Yamuna in an auspicious time. Later in this chapter, Varuna himself says, "This was done by my ignorant servant, who is a fool." O king, not seeing Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men loudly cried out, "O Krishna! O Ram!" Lord Krishna heard their cries and understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore, the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, went to the court of Arunadev. Several cowherd men accompanied Nanda Maharaj as guards when he went to take his bath that night. When Nanda didn't come out of the water, they began to cry out. Though Krishna was far away sleeping on his bed of flowers, he heard the cowherd men shouting, "Krishna, Ram!" Because Krishna is all-pervading, he's always very near to everyone. Understanding the situation, he rushed there, jumped into the water, and went to the court of Varuna. Krishna was determined to free his father and other cowherd men from the fear of a mere demigod. Krishna is called Svanam Abhayada, relieving the fear of his associates, because by freeing Nanda from Varuna's clutches, Krishna relieved the fear of his relatives. Seeing that the Lord Hrishikesh had arrived, the demon Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows: "Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved, O Lord. Those who accept your lotus feet, O personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence." Varuna said, "All the thousands of bodies which I've received till now have been useless, because in all these lives I didn't see you. Today my body has become successful. Today I have understood what is most valuable. Though I possess all varieties of jewels, until now I have not obtained such a jewel as you. Those who worship your lotus feet can cross the ocean of material existence. How fortunate I am to attain your darshan without any effort. My obeisances unto you, the Supreme Person of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world." Varuna said, "You are approached by the three powers of bhakti, jnana, and yoga. I pay my respects to you as Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma. Your father, who is sitting here, was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine who did not understand his proper duty. Therefore, please forgive us." Krishna said, "Why are you embarrassing me by praising me like this?" In anger, in answer, Varuna said, "I have really offended you. According to bhakti shastras, one can enter the water before sunrise after an especially short ekadasi. Not knowing this, one of my foolish servants committed a great offense by bringing your father here. The offense of my servant is also mine." Pointing with his hand, Varuna showed Nanda seated on a jeweled throne, which Varuna himself had offered in order to worship Nanda Maharaj, who was internally engaged in remembering Krishna, his own worshipful deity. Varuna continued, "O Krishna, you are the ocean of forgiveness, but because I am an ocean of offense, you can punish me suitably if you wish. O Krishna, O seer of everything, please give your mercy to me. O Govinda, you are most affectionate to your father, please take him home." Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus satisfied by Lord Varuna, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Person of Godhead, Lord of Lords, took his father and returned home, where their relatives were overjoyed to see them. It is understood that Krishna returned home with Nanda Maharaj before sunrise." Mm. So interesting, little insights that he's giving there. Would you like to read Ananda Vrindavan Chapter?
The Supreme Lord passed his days enjoying various loving relationships with the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Krishna and his effulgent companions continued to perform their pleasing pastimes of herding the multitudes of cows. One Ekadasi, Nanda Baba, the king of the Gopas, happily observed a fast. The next year on Dwadasi, he had to break the fast at the right moment in order to complete his vow. But due to a short breaking period, he hastily bathed in the Yamuna River at an inappropriate time along with a few pious friends. Even though he had bathed at an inauspicious time, Nanda Maharaj did not consider it offensive since he had acted only to honor the Dwadashi Tithi. Following the rules of scriptures, he submerged himself reverently in the Yamuna. But the servants of Varuna angrily arrested Nanda Maharaj and put him in great distress for bathing too early in the morning. Nanda Maharaj had impeccable character, but due to a slight deviation from the rules, he was seized by Varunadeva, the lord of the waters. Unaware of his destination, Nanda felt completely distraught. Standing on the bank of the Yamuna, the friends of Nand Maharaj panicked with fear and confusion. They shouted, "What has happened? What has happened?" Seeing that they could not do anything to help him, they approached Krishna, who destroys all fear, and spoke anxiously, "O Krishna, who rewards the pious and punishes the evil, befriends the distressed and delivers the bound. Please help us. Please help us. Something tragic has happened. Some proud persons kidnapped your father, who is worshipable by Lord Brahma, while he bathed in the Yamuna. O mighty armed one, please save him. Go there and deliver him. Only you can save him from this terrible calamity." The cowherd men ran helplessly hither and thither to the banks of the on the banks of the Yamuna. Hearing their anguished cries, Krishna considered, "This is the irreversible action of the foolish and lowly servants of Varun." Thinking like this, Krishna submerged in the Yamuna in order to visit the city of Varuna to bless him with his presence. For some reason, Krishna felt attracted to Varuna even though he had improperly treated his father Nanda Maharaj. The young gopis of Gokul and everyone else on the bank of the river fell into depression when King Krishna left for Varuna's abode. Though the gorgeous Vraj gopis did not always see Krishna, because of their intense attachment to him and because they stayed in his village, they felt they lived in the same house as Krishna. Fearing that he had departed for the other world, the gopis lost all strength and collapsed on the ground. At this perilous time, one moment seemed like a thousand yugas. In this state, the gopis could not hear anything, see anything, or say anything. Their minds went with Krishna and their bodies shook uncontrollably. In a world full of changes, pure love is the only constant. Although withering away due to separation from Krishna, Radhika managed to sustain her life by the power of her Krishna prema. Even though they fanned Radha with lotus and tala leaves and sprinkled her with sandal water, the Priya Sakhis could not reduce Radhika's high fever in separation from Krishna. Luckily, her friend named Murcha, unconsciousness, arrived to extinguish the fire. Seeing the filaments of cotton held under her nose moving slightly with her breathing, the Sakhis understood that Radha still lived. When a smart Sakhi said, "Krishna is coming," Radha opened her eyes and returned to external consciousness with great difficulty. Not seeing Krishna, however, Radha just fared into space. Her eyes looked like a pair of blue lotuses painted on a canvas. Even though Radhika heard her friends say, "Krishna will be coming in a moment," she thought, "If one moment becomes like one yuga of time, am I to blame for suffering such pains of separation?" Not seeing Krishna before her, Radha felt even more anguished. The hot sparks of fire in her heart shot forth as tears mixed with her kajal and dripped in black streams down her golden lotus face. Krishna, the ocean of mercy, proceeded to the abode of Varuna. Upon seeing him, Varuna humbly and courteously received the Lord. Filled with affection, he worshipped Krishna with argya and other articles. Varuna praised the effulgent Supreme Lord as the reservoir of all exceptional characteristics, the embodiment of all happiness, and the very form of concentrated bliss and knowledge. Varunadev said, "O jewel of the womb of Devaki, you shine brilliantly among the devatas headed by Shiva. I offer my respects to you. You descend as an avatar to relieve the earth of her burden. Your handsome form and qualities defeat the attraction of thousands of cupids. You stand before us as the spotlessly pure and blissful son of Nanda. The dust of your lotus feet has removed my covering of passion. All the residents of my city have now become purified by your auspicious presence. Today my birth has become successful. Due to possessing fabulous wealth, my knowledge had become covered. Therefore I could not understand your infallible possession as the master of Maya and the controller of all devouring time. O Madhava, O creator of all the universes, you should not keep men like me blinded by your illusory potency. Even the best Muni cannot surpass your Maya. O killer of Agasur, you have all desirable characteristics. Though my servants think themselves very clever, they do not have a drop of intelligence. They have committed a terrible act by bringing your father here, yet at the same time they have bestowed a great boon upon me. Indeed, I offended you, who are so rarely attained by anyone in this world. Due to pride, I violated the rules of conduct. By keeping the dust of your lotus feet as the crown jewel on my head, however, I may nullify the poisonous fever caused by my severe offense. O Lord of Lords, your splendid complexion easily conquers the glistening trunk of a young Tamala tree. Shiva, the father of Kartikeya, and all the demigods worship you, whose eyes are beautiful lotus petals, and who has a splendidly contoured belly, who radiates a dazzling effulgence, whose graceful arms extend to your knees, and who wears a gorgeous forest garland. I worship that super excellent transcendental form. After praising Krishna, Varuna took sweet fragrant water in his hands and washed Lord's lotus feet, which are the abode of auspiciousness. This immediately removed all calamities. Varuna said, O Supreme Person, O subduer of the enemies, please be merciful to me. Please take whatever jewels you want from my kingdom. Actually, everything here belongs to you. What more can I say? I also belong to you. All my pious acts have borne fruit by receiving your darshan. If the desire to see you arises within a person, it will not disappear all of a sudden. Therefore, just to taste the bliss of seeing you, I have safely kept your father here. O ornament of the earth, please forgive my offense. Though the servant may be forgiven, the master should be punished for the offense of his servant. So I deserve severe punishment for this act. Having given up his false pride, Varuna folded hands and stood meekly before the Lord. Krishna compassionately said, O Lord of the waters, I am pleased with your motives and the statements of your love for me. Keep whatever wealth you have, although I have come from a distant place, because you are my devotee, this is also my residence. After speaking a few immeasurably sweet words, the son of the king of Vrindavan placed his father in front of him and calmly went home. All directions erupted with an auspicious uproar upon Krishna's return to Vrindavan. The minds of Radhika and the gopis submerged in anxiety and simultaneously floated in liquid currents of nectar. Somehow the gopis quickly revived Radha and everyone filled with boundless happiness.
Haribol.